ओम ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्या ज्ञानञ्जनासलक्काय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः मुखं करोति वाचलं पङ्गुं न जायते गहिं यत्कृपातमहं वन्दे श्रीगुरुञ्जीवतरणं नमः ॐ विष्णुपदाय कृष्णप्रस्थाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्तस्वामिनीति नामने नमस्ते सरस्वतीदेवी गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेषा संयवारी पश्चिचारिणे जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्रीअद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासदि गौरभक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे So, just a little while ago, I got a message from Govinda Maharaj asking me what I'm going to speak about today. And it was decided that I'm going to continue on the same theme as I was speaking about previously. A lot can be said about compassion. And although we've covered many different facets of compassion, still there's a lot more that can be said specifically in terms of our relationships with each other as practitioners of Krishna consciousness. Because this whole theme expanded from one line from Nectar of Devotion, that one should not give unnecessary trouble to any living entity. This is a principle of Krishna consciousness, which every Vaishnava should aspire to achieve, because as we say every day, Vanchakalpa Turubhyas Chakripa Sindhubhya Eva Cha Patitanam Pavani Vyo Vaishnava Vyo Namo Namaha. We offer our basis to Vaishnava devotees of the Lord who are full of compassion for the fallen conditioned souls. It is a very important quality of Vaishnava behavior to be compassionate upon others. And therefore, as we explained, one of the symptoms of compassion is that a devotee cannot tolerate to see others suffering. And in our first presentation, we spoke about appealing to the compassionate nature of the Lord. Actually, that was the second lecture. First lecture, we spoke a lot from Chaitanya Bhagavat, giving many references and expanding on them about how important it is to not criticize others. So criticizing, it causes simply unnecessary disturbance to others, not only those to whom we are criticizing, but also to others who have to hear. Of course, there are some who may not be disturbed. And Srila Prabhupada, we're going to read from a letter today where Prabhupada describes such persons to be like flies who are interested to going to the source. Some may not be disturbed by hearing criticism of others, but inevitably it will cause disturbance. In fact, Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Sri Bhakti Loka, he talks about the necessity of controlling the tongue. And he describes that it is very important that if a person cannot control his tongue, he will speak unnecessarily about others. And by speaking unnecessarily about others, then he will simply cause disturbance and he will create enmity. Anyways, that's a whole topic in of itself. Yeah. That's a topic about prajapa. And one time I took that topic and I gave 5 lectures on prajapa. And they're all from Bhakti Loka. Bhakti Vinod Thakur gives a lot of very good instruction about the necessity of controlling the tongue when it comes to speaking about others. Because speaking about others is actually a very natural proclivity of the soul. But usually the topic is Krishna, at least for those who understand the primary purpose for utilizing the tongue. And so naturally the residents of Vaishnavas and the residents of the spiritual world, they're always filled with topics talk about somebody else, but they're usually speaking about a little dark blue boy who plays the flute. And the gopis are all getting together in their little groups and they're also talking about this little dark blue boy, giving various descriptions about his behavior and some, especially about the different activities he's done. So it's natural to speak about somebody else, but unfortunately, if the tongue is not controlled, then immediately when we get in the association of others, the tongue will begin speaking about somebody else and will be looking for something to say about them. And if we're not careful and we do not control the propensity of the tongue to speak about others, eventually we may say something which may be disturbing to either the person about whom we're speaking or to somebody who has relationships with that person. And before we know it, we're causing harm to others. And as we explained in our first lecture, causing harm to others generally is equally distributed. Actually, not generally, absolutely. It equally distributed means it comes back to ourselves. And we gave different Shastric references about how we suffer by causing suffering to others. And we explained that those who may not be on the platform by which they can always speak about Krishna and have an attraction to always speak about Krishna, they may restrict themselves from the tendency to speak about others out of fear of suffering. And we said that generally that's good, at least we're not speaking unnecessarily about others and causing disturbance to others. But the motivation of not wanting to suffer is not completely pure. And when a devotee actually is awakened, his spontaneous attraction to always speak about Krishna, then he doesn't have to worry about speaking critically or unnecessarily about others. In fact, I think it's in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Parikshit Maharaj and Shukadeva Goswami in a discussion there. The Parikshit Maharaj is describing acknowledging to Shukadeva Goswami that Paramahansas are those who have accepted the Supreme Personality of Godhead within the core of their hearts. They are naturally inclined to always speak about Krishna in the same way as materialists are always inclined to speak about women and sex. That's the example is given right in the Bhagavatam, 10th canto. In other words, he is explaining that Paramahansas, those who have accepted Krishna within the core of their heart, they have a spontaneous attraction to speak about Krishna. Why? Because their minds are always absorbed in thoughts of Him. Because their minds are always absorbed in thoughts of Him, then anything they see reminds them of Him. And that is their vision. Therefore, they're always speaking about Krishna. And the analogy it is used is just like materialists, what are their minds always absorbed in thoughts of? It doesn't take much to act as a catalyst to trigger some discussion about mundane subjects for people whose minds are always of thoughts absorbed in these thoughts. And in fact, I oftentimes use the example in reference to this verse. I remember when I was working in construction. When I think about this verse, I remember when I was working in construction. And the kind of people who worked in construction that I worked with, they were generally attracted to these topics. Not only would they speak about them quite often times, but any object that would pass by would immediately be a topic for discussion. Spontaneous. They don't have to practice. It's just spontaneous. Why? Because their minds are always absorbed in these thoughts. As soon as they see a catalyst, immediately it comes out. Spontaneous discussion about these topics. So Parikshit Maharaj uses this analogy, something we can relate to. Although as we understand the Paramahansas, their spontaneous inclination to always speak about Krishna is born of their deep love for Krishna within the core of their hearts. Yes. Just like Prabhupada gives the example about the parent who loves the child. Whenever the parent sees the toy of the child, immediately the parent sees the child. The parent hears the voice of the child, they immediately see the child. They see the shoe of the child, they see the child. Whatever these things they see, they all immediately see the connection, because anything that's connected to the child immediately elicits thoughts of the child. So we're speaking about the necessity of controlling the tongue to not cause disturbance to others or cause disturbance ultimately, or I shouldn't say ultimately, or simultaneously causing disturbance to ourselves. And this is also connected with the topic of compassion. In the last class that we spoke about compassion mostly towards non-devotees. And the example that was given is how we should always overlook the shortcomings of others and simply to see what the sincere desire that is there in their hearts to do something for Krishna. And we should be willing to accept whatever offering somebody makes, no matter how small it is. And the example was that because just like Krishna, he considers that whatever benedictions he gives to be very insignificant in comparison to even a very small offering from the hand of his devotees. And we spoke about how the Lord magnifies, he increases the size of whatever may appear to be a very small offering, he magnifies it to make it very, very great. And since that is the Lord's nature, then the Vaishnavas who are representatives of the Lord, they also are meant to embody that compassionate nature of the Lord. And we've explained how ultimately the highest embodiment of the Lord's compassionate nature is none other than Srimati Radharani. Because she pleases Krishna the most, therefore she is very compassionate, although doing something that could please Krishna is otherwise very difficult for us. Krishna makes himself accessible to be pleased when we offer something to Radharani. And then we mentioned how also not only is the embodiment Radharani the embodiment of this compassion, but the spiritual master who is also represented in that same line also is an embodiment of compassion as well. And how all Vaishnavas should be compassionate by their willingness to accept whatever little offering someone may offer and utilize it for the service of Krishna for their benefit. So we spoke about that in relationship mostly to non-devotees, but then we're going to speak a little bit more about dealings between devotees. And since time is limited, I'm not going to continue reading where we left off from Vishnu Jan Maharaj, unfortunately, because we have limited time and we won't have time to read everything. But instead I would like to read from a letter from Srila Prabhupada dated the 4th of February 1972, which covers the same theme. And this is similarly profound. The Prabhupada is explaining how he's to the devotee he's writing to. I'm very pleased by the devotee's sentiments. And then he says, it is not so much that because there may be some fault in our God brothers and God sisters, or because there may be some mismanagement or lack of cooperation, that this is due to being impersonalists. It is the nature of the living condition to always have some fault. Even in the spiritual world, there is some fault and envy. Are you ready? Does that destroy every conception you had about the spiritual world? Prabhupada will explain the type of faults that exist in the spiritual world. But the point, before we get to that, just put that on the shelf for a minute and don't let it disturb your devotional meditation. Prabhupada will very nicely explain how faults and envy exist in the spiritual world. But specifically, Prabhupada appears to be addressing a situation where the devotee has written to Srila Prabhupada about people who are complaining about mismanagement or lack of cooperation. And specifically, they were presenting that because of these things, faults and mismanagement, it seemed to be a lot of impersonalism. And Prabhupada is going to explain that actually, no, people who think that everything's going to be utopia, they're the impersonalists. So Prabhupada is saying, in the spiritual world, there's some fault and envy. So sometimes the gopis will quarrel over Krishna's favor. And once Krishna was so much attracted to Radharani that by mistake he tried to milk the bull instead of the cow. And sometimes when the gopis used to put on their dress and makeup for seeing Krishna, they would be too much hasty and smear kumkum and mascara in the wrong places. And their ornaments and dresses would appear as if small children had been trying to dress themselves. And they were not very expert like that. There are so many examples. But it is not the same as material fault or material envy. It is transcendental because it is all based on Krishna. Sometimes, when one gopi would serve Krishna very nicely, the others would say, oh, she has done so nicely, let me do better for pleasing Krishna. That is envy, but it is transcendental, without malice. So, Prabhupada's here saying there's faults and there's envy. Krishna's milking a bull. Instead of a cow, the gopis aren't dressing themselves properly. And some of the gopis amongst themselves, they're competing. They want to do better than the other gopis. They say, oh, this gopi is doing good. I want to do better than this gopi. Now, ordinarily, we would think that there's envy. And Prabhupada is explaining, yes, there is envy in the spiritual world, but there's no malice. Now, we should not confuse this. For instance, what this brings to mind, how Srila Narottam Das Thakur describes lust, anger, greed, bewilderment, madness, and envy. And he describes how these can be dovetailed for the service of the Lord. So he said, lust I will dovetail by offering the fruits of my work for Krishna's satisfaction. Anger I will dovetail for the service of the Lord by becoming angry at those who are envious of Vaishnavas. Greed I will dovetail by becoming greedy for the association of Vaishnavas to hear the topics of Krishna. Bewilderment I will be there because I will be always bewildered about my desire to achieve the desired goal. Madness, he gives the example of madness as mad after achieving the desired goal, I think it was something like that. But it's explained that envy cannot be dovetailed. We cannot dovetail envy. So it's not that we can be envious of somebody and call that being using it for Krishna's service. But still, as Prabhupada is explaining here, completely purified envy exists in the spiritual world. And what is the symptom of purified envy? The symptom of purified envy is that it's always to increase Krishna's service. And there's never any malice. With envy, which is manifest in the material world, generally when we're envious, then we want to put others down. We want to either do better or achieve something better than others. And the way we do it is by diminishing what they're doing. Just like we might be envious of a particular devotee who happens to get a lot of respect. And we may be a competitor. We may be thinking, yeah, I want that respect also. So we may be sitting in a group of devotees who may speak so respectfully about a particular Vaishnava, about the particular service he did and how he got mercy. And immediately we'll be thinking, he didn't do so much. I did better than that. I did more than that. How can they be speaking about what he did when, look at how much I did. And mine immediately, you know, because the envy is there, mine immediately diminishes, makes insignificant, insubstantial what the person has done. So it begins with a thought. It may progress to a few statements, especially if we become intolerant that he's getting too much glorification. Hey, wait a minute. Just look. Take a look. When I say something, examine what he's actually done. So that's malice. We want to diminish somebody else's service, and by diminishing their service, we put ourselves up. So in the material world, the way everybody makes progress to move up is by pushing everybody else down. If I push everybody down and criticize everybody, then here I am. I haven't spoken about any of my faults because they don't exist. That should be clear now, isn't it? Now you recognize who I am. That's envy. It becomes very dangerous when in a society of devotees. Because as we explained, the devotee mentality is the devotee always wants to take others and push them forward. And they want to stay back. Gopi Bharta Parakamali or Dasa Dasa, Hasanu Das. They want to become the servant of the servant of the servant. And we gave the example in last class. We gave the example of the gopis, that generally they don't want to be in Krishna's personal association. They don't want to enjoy with Krishna. And they get a pleasure so high, millions of times, the pleasure they get from taking that position of service to the divine couple and staying in the background. But Srimati Radharani, she makes all these different arrangements to bring the gopis forward in their connection with Krishna. And then when she does that, she experiences a pleasure that is 10 million times greater. Now, she's not doing it because thinking, I want that bliss. No, actually, she wants to bring others. That's because she's so compassionate, she's so merciful. She wants to make all these arrangements to bring everybody forward in their relationship with Krishna. And she experiences a bliss 10 million times greater than being with Krishna. And because her only desire is to please Krishna, how could she experience so much bliss unless Krishna was pleased? It's not possible to experience so much bliss unless Krishna is pleased by that service. So that is the mentality that Vaishnava is not thinking of how to push others down and obstruct service to Krishna. That's what it means. By pushing others, diminishing others, it means we're actually obstructing, getting in the way of others' service to Krishna. And we think, my service is the most important. So because my service is most important, everybody should simply assist me in my service. And then everybody's rightly situated. Such an envious, it's like thinking I am the source of all service to Krishna. Everything is emanating from me. The wise who know this perfectly, they engage in my service and worship me with all of their hearts. That's envious. We have to be very careful. That Vaishnava mentality means, no, how can I increase Krishna's service? So in the spiritual world there's envy, but there's never any malice. no gopi is ever thinking obstructing another gopi's service or causing harm to another gopi. So that is what Prabhupada is essentially what Prabhupada is saying here. There's not much more. Prabhupada just presents the absolute truth perfectly. That is envy, but it is transcendental without malice. So we shall not expect that anywhere there is any utopia. Rather, that is impersonalism. People should not expect that even in the Krishna consciousness society there will be utopia. Because devotees are persons, therefore there will always be some lacking. But the difference is that they're lacking because they have given up everything to serve Krishna. Money, jobs, reputation, wealth, big education, everything. Their lackings have become transcendental. Because despite everything they may do, their topmost intention is to serve Krishna. One who is engaged in devotional service, despite the most abominable action, is to be considered saintly because he is rightly situated. The devotees of Krishna are the most exalted persons on this planet, better than kings, all of them. So we should always remember that, and like the bumblebee, always look for the nectar or the best qualities of a person, not like the utopians, who are like the flies, who always go to the open sores or find the faults in a person. And because they cannot find any utopia, and because they cannot find anyone without faults, they want to become void, merge, nothing. They think that is utopia. What Prabhupada is saying here, actually the utopians are the impersonalists, because they think this utopia means that there's no faults. Well, Prabhupada is explaining, no, everywhere in creation you're going to find some fault, even in the spiritual world. Because you're thinking there should be no faults anywhere, what do the utopians always think about? They always think about the faults. All these faults, and because of all these faults, they're thinking so many improper relationships, impersonal relationships. But Prabhupada said, no, faults exist everywhere. But what is a devotee? What is a Vaishnava? The Vaishnava is the one who always overlooks these faults and just simply sees the good faults. A Vaishnava is called a dosha darshi. A dosha darshi means he sees without faults. These words are used in Chaitanya Charitamrita in relationship to a Vaishnava named Haridas Pandit. He could not see any faults. He just couldn't see them because all he could see was the good qualities in everyone. He'd always glorify the good qualities he would see. Although faults will be there, but he wasn't interested in looking at them. We have to see what is the spark, what is the potential for devotional service in every living being. And everyone has the potential for devotional service. And if they don't display that potential, then as Vaishnavas, as preachers of Krishna consciousness, we should be compassionate upon them. And we should be thinking that if they're not displaying their potential for devotional service, maybe it's because some Vaishnava hasn't been merciful to them and hasn't touched their heart. Instead of looking at the fault or looking at their material qualification, we should see their spiritual qualification. And what was that spiritual qualification that Vishwajan Maharaj gave as an example? He gave the example, just like a person may come to the temple and he has a desire to sweep the floor for Krishna. All the rest of his life may be totally abominable. But he had some desire. He wanted to do something for Krishna. And immediately, we see that. He wants to do something for Krishna. So the Vaishnava is one who always tries to bring that out in others, that desire to do something for Krishna. He's not always trying to push them down by saying, no, everything has to be done my way. Now, of course, we know in management, there's sometimes there's certain decisions and different things that everybody has to work in a particular direction to cooperate with the authorities. But it's very interesting, in another letter, which I happen to have here, Prabhupada talks about the duty of the leaders to bring out the voluntary spirit in others. I'll end with that, because I know my time is up. Prabhupada is saying right here, he said, so the future of this Krishna consciousness movement is very bright, so long the managers remain vigilant, that 16 rounds are being chanted by everyone without fail, that they are all rising before 4 in the morning, attending Mangal Arati. Our leaders should be careful not to kill the spirit of enthusiastic service, which is individual and spontaneous and voluntary. They should try to always generate some atmosphere of fresh challenge to the devotees, so that they will agree enthusiastically to rise and meet it. That is the art of management, to draw out spontaneous, loving spirit of sacrificing some energy for Krishna. But where are so many expert managers? Anyways, Prabhupada is going to continue. But the point this Prabhupada is making is that, yes, is that that spontaneous, that voluntary desire to do something for Krishna, that should be awakened by the preaching of the Vaishnava. Everybody should be encouraged to do something for Krishna. Of course, we cannot whimsically do something and use Krishna's name for it. But Vaishnavas are always very merciful how to engage others and how to accept whatever small offering they may be able to offer and give and utilize it for Krishna's service, not for themselves. Sometimes we tend to think that, yes, there's so much service, I have too much service. And therefore we think that the best way to engage somebody is to minimize my burden. If I can minimize my burden so I have less service, then I can engage, and then others can be engaged in service. Well, that's true. That is a way to engage others and give others the opportunity to render service. But Prabhupada always emphasized that this Krishna consciousness movement is voluntary. We voluntarily submit ourselves to somebody to be engaged in service by being inspired first to do something for Krishna. If the inspiration to do something for Krishna is not there, it's very hard. Sometimes it could be like trying to squeeze water out of a stone. Just squeeze as much as we can get. And if you surrender, Prabhu, you'll become inspired. No, but the inspiration has to be there. So inspiration comes from hearing. It comes from Vaishnava relationship, which are free from envy, free from pride, and which are filled with compassion. Compassion means wanting to see others advance, even if it means they can step on my head to go forward. That is compassion. That is Vaishnava mentality. Then inspiration is there. And then everybody's, can I do this? Can I do that? Can I do that? Because it's based on the proper platform. Vaishnava principles, freedom from envy, and a desire to see everybody engaged in Krishna's service. This is Vaishnava dealings. Prabhupada talks about this in so many places. The 7th canto, 5th chapter of the Bhagavatam. There's a wonderful purport about Vaikuntha mentality. So I'm just going to finish the letter and then we'll let Prabhupada conclude this discussion. So, if there are sometimes slight disagreements between devotees, it is not due to impersonalism, but it is because they are persons, and such disagreements should not be taken very seriously. The devotee is always pessimistic about the material world, but he is very optimistic about the spiritual life. So in this way, you should consider that anyone engaged in Krishna's service is always the best person. I am very pleased that you are assisting your godbrother so nicely. Yes, this is our real position, to be servants of the servants of the servants. And by your quiet and humble attitude, you shall set the example of a Vaishnava, so that all may learn from you. And very soon their puffed up attitude will disappear, and they will come to you and seek your advice in matters. Okay, I'll stop here. Thank you very much. Thank you. Well, sometimes a person may have a responsibility to find fault. Prabhupada said that. It is my duty to find some fault. So if somebody actually has the position that he has to educate, train, or discipline, then he may have to point out some fault. But if the devotee who is the recipient of that is sufficiently inspired, because he wants to know what his faults are so he can make progress in Krishna consciousness, then he'll relish the opportunity to hear what his fault is, because he wants to advance in Krishna consciousness. But if everybody thinks it's their duty to find fault in the same person, of course, that person may be so humble they may be ready to accept it from everybody. Then, if they do, then certainly it's to their advantage to be so humble, genuinely humble, that they see everybody as their superior and they're ready to take instruction from whatever one says to them, anyone says to them. But the bottom line is, it's the proper time and place to find a fault in somebody. And it's the proper person who should do it in a compassionate way. If it can't be done in a compassionate way, better to hold the tongue and to look inside and to ask ourselves, am I seeing the fault in this person because I have the same fault but I don't want to recognize it in myself? Because it's very easy to find fault in everybody else around us. It's not very difficult to find some fault. What's difficult is to find it in ourselves. And generally, what disturbs us the most is the same thing that we have, but we don't want to confront it ourselves. So it's a lot easier to point it out in somebody outside. So if I can't be compassionate, better to hold my tongue And if it's really something that's detrimental for that Vaishnava, we should tell it to the person who can be compassionate and go back and look at our own hearts. Okay?